Welcome to episode 46 of Atelier Talk, our art studio podcast with conversations on art and creativity and artists' interviews, and with me, Stephanie Hüllmann. I'm a visual artist and usually also with photographer Nina Gebke. But today, Nina is not here because we have a very special guest. This is only our second episode in English, so I would like to start with explaining that at Atelier Talk, we have a kind of a special point of view on how we define artists. To us, anybody who does something intensely and deeply and over a long period of time is, in our point of view, an artist. So Nina and I, we talk about several subjects around this topic, and every other week I interview cooks and painters, writers, musicians, photographers, and so on. So today, my guest is Daphne Cohn. Her art is really special. Her art is asking questions. Daphne is the host of the wonderful podcast Beyond, which started off as the Creativity Habit podcast. And she's a teacher, a community maker, a questioner, and someone who moves in this world very consciously. Someone who thinks deeply about things. And ever since I heard her say that she, in one of her interviews that she had with artists, that she mentioned that her own art is asking questions, I had wanted to talk to her and ask my own questions. And that is probably 3 to 4 years ago. And so today I'm really, really excited that I'm able to talk to her and ask all my questions. So in this conversation, we talk about her personal struggles with self-worth and growing up in a creative family. We talk about her path later in life and about how her art evolved and its effects on her personal development and how questions are freedom to her. I find this was a very, very special conversation. I enjoyed it very much, and I hope you enjoy listening to Daphne as much as I have. Hi, Daphne. I am so, so grateful to have you here at this podcast. I have such great admiration for the work you do and the way you reflect on things. I am an avid listener of your podcast, and I am really grateful and really excited to have you here today. Thank you so much and welcome.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation and this time with you. I really appreciate it.
Actually, I had wanted to ask you quite a few questions for several years now, and I think it's kind of wonderful that we meet on International Women's Day. I kind of like that.
Yes.
And I would like our listeners to get to know you a little. And well, I don't know much about you either, so I would like to start with your little world in order to find out how you move in this world. And so what kind of family did you grow up in? And are you the daughter of a very creative family? Are you daughter of artists?
There is a lot of creativity in my family. Let's see. So my father was a high school teacher, and that was essentially his art. He was actually quite a brilliant high school teacher. And my mother is still an editor, although retired for many years. And she was a writer, still is a writer. She wrote a lot of poetry and some prose, nothing that she published. And she's also a pianist. Well, I don't think she would call herself that, but she has played classical music since I was a little child. And since she was a little girl, she's been playing the piano. And then I have a twin sister who's a painter and makes mosaics, and me, and I never thought of myself as an artist in any way or as creative. It was always my sister was the creative one, and I was the academic one. I was the one who did well in school. So it took me a really long time to even see myself as creative. And I only in the last, I would say, year, even though I have an online community for artists and makers, it's still only in the last year that I have started to call myself an artist. And I had to really explore what artist means and what art means in order to give myself permission to call myself an artist. But yes, I do come from a pretty creative family.
I didn't know that it's only a year ago that you started calling yourself an artist. And when you say you were the academic in the family, what exactly, which part of the sciences were you into?
Well, academic, when I say it, just means basically with study, like good in school. And so I was the one who, it wasn't sciences, I'm terrible in the sciences, but it was more that I would really apply myself in school to getting good grades, to doing well. And I love school. So it's not that it wasn't a hard thing for me necessarily to do that. It's just that was how I saw myself. That was where I saw my value.
But I find that actually a little hard to understand if your mom was even a pianist or playing lots of music and your sister's a painter. Where did it come from? Why did you pull back from the arts? Do you have any
I think there's a couple things. One, both my mom and my dad really valued the intellectual pursuit of life. They really valued school and how we did in school. And so I definitely took that in and wanted to do well and wanted to get validation from both of them. I also really, like I said, I really love school. So I both found it interesting and because I got so much validation, I continued on that journey for a long time because it was a journey that fed that need for the validation and for the love, as well as also giving me a lot of joy. And I think it was just somehow easier being a twin to separate out for her to be the artist and me to be more of the academic, more of the studious one. It just helped us separate our own identities in some way.
Yes, and actually that's probably how our societies work, that they give praise very easily to the ones that are good in school, in math or geography what was the reaction to your sister's way, to your sister's path?
You know, it's funny, I often wondered for her, I've asked her about this because I felt like if the roles had been reversed, it would have been really hard for me because I got so much praise, because I always did really well with getting good grades, and her grades were fine. She's very smart. So it's not that she struggled, but she didn't get the grades that I got. And somehow she was fine with that. She never felt the need to compete with me around it. She seems to have be totally comfortable with it. I don't know how, because I needed it so much. I needed that validation so much that I couldn't imagine being in her position and having, if she was the one who got all the praise for that and I was not, but she was fine. We've talked about a lot as adults, and I think she just was more comfortable in her own skin that way.
Is it maybe due to the arts that you talk about this thing that everybody has to find his or her song. And if art and painting is so important to her, maybe she found her song earlier and she was comfortable with that.
Yeah, it could be. It definitely could be. I don't know. But she still paints. I have some of her art in my office. And I honestly, I think she just, as a person, came to being more comfortable in herself earlier than I did. She has a very strong sense of self. And that took me a lot longer to develop. So I wonder if that was also part of it for her.
So which profession did you choose after school?
Well, I've never really chosen a profession. It's been a very interesting path. I went to college, graduated from college, and decided that I had some part-time, temporary jobs, and then went to live at a Zen center for 3 years because I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And so I thought I'll just work on a farm at the Zen center, at the Buddhist center, and went for 6 months, but ended up staying for 3 years. Then when ended up meeting my husband there and moved across the country to be with him and started a family. So everything, one thing just kind of led to the next. And then I was a mom, and then I started working online and creating my own businesses online. But one thing I have since learned about myself, and I think this is also part of how the artist shows up in me, is that I am always exploring, always exploring. And for years, this was such a hard thing about me. I struggled with this for many years because it felt like, God, I can't stay with one thing. I'm just going from one thing to the next. I see these people who have this clear path and they stay with it, and it just looks so wonderful and reassuring and easier. And what's wrong with me that I can't seem to settle on one thing? And now I just have come to understand that this is, like I said, part of how my creativity expresses itself, which is this constant exploration. So for years, my work has been online, but it has been many things. It has been in the healthcare industry or health industry. It has been in business, like growing businesses online. And then in 2016, that's when I started much more clearly down this path of creativity. And that's what's led me to where I am now.
That's really, really interesting that you find that you thought it was a flaw that you love exploring and try to find out new things. Because if you look at it closely, that's exactly what artists do, right? They play with materials and subjects and try to find new answers to questions or try to develop new questions. But if you look at it from a society point of view, yeah, you have after school, you're good in math, so you go to university and go into this direction. And if you change your path so many times, people are confused. And that's strange when I look at it, or even a little bit sad. And I always thought that the US, in the US, it's easier to change your path than in Europe or in Germany.
I think it might be. There is a lot of change here. People move a lot. People do start and stop different jobs. And still, it's, at least internally, it was hard for me because it made it harder to make money.
Yeah.
Like you said, people can get confused. What do you do? What exactly? What's going on here? And so making money was harder for me because of that. And And just honoring that, really, it took me many years before I could honor it and see it in a positive way.
But is it, okay, I got to know you through your podcast, through your wonderful and very successful podcast, the Creativity Habit podcast, which you changed into Beyond Podcast after, I don't know, a couple of years. And when I listen to you now and the Creativity Habit podcast, I mean, this is a podcast that talks about a habit. So how you were always fascinated by artists, and is it something that that you try to understand more, or how did that happen?
Yeah, so that's a story that for some people might be a little out there, but it's what happened, which is basically after trying many different things, many different types of businesses, and feeling like I was flailing around, there was this day where I was standing at my office, which was upstairs at the time, and I was looking out the window at the mountains, really wondering, what am I doing? What's happening here? And I heard a voice, which has happened just a few times in my life, but I heard a voice that said the words, "An experiment in creative living." And it was one of those moments where like all the hairs stand up and my heart beat faster, and I didn't understand it, but I knew it was the direction I had to take. And so that was what inspired the Creativity Habit, because I thought, well, I don't know much about creativity. That was my thinking then, even though I had really been creative my whole life. But I thought, I don't know very much about creativity. So if I'm going to do whatever this is, this experiment in creative living, I will start with what I do know, which is research and interviewing. So I will interview people who I see as artists, as makers, as creative beings, and start to ask them about creativity and the creative process. And I also started doing research. And at that time, I was reading a book by Twyla Tharp called The Creative Habit. And I loved that title. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to name my podcast The Creativity Habit. I didn't really know if that was copyright infringement, and that I don't think it was, but that is a great title. And I changed the podcast eventually because I always felt a little uncomfortable that it was so close to Twyla Tharp's book title. But that was what started the podcast and started me down this path that has now become my entire life. Like, my devotion to creativity is the most sacred thing in my life. So that was the beginning of that path.
How long after you heard that voice, how long did it take until you started to move into that direction?
I started moving almost immediately in terms of researching. Mm-hmm. And then I think the podcast was 4 or 5 months later, I think I started it. I started it in February. So I guess I heard the voice in October, in 2015, I think it was like October or something, 2015. And then the podcast launched February of 2016. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe 4 or 5 months, something like that.
That's an amazing story. I'd love to hear the other times when you heard that voice, but that's not part of this interview. Maybe we'll get to that later. I don't know.
Well, and actually, there is one way that it one time is really directly linked to this, because when I was in college, I was leaving the coffee house area, this main area, and that was the first time when I heard a voice, at least to my recollection. And when I say heard a voice, it's this, like, it just sounds like it's coming, some loud voice coming from outside of me, such that when I heard it this time in college, I looked around thinking other people must have heard it too. Mm-hmm. And nobody was like, I'm like, no one's looking up at the sky or no one's looking around them. But the voice that I heard said, learn to listen. And that was the beginning of that practice, which deeply contributed to the podcast, to the way that I interview, to a lot of the ways that I engage with life. So that was a powerful, that is very much connected to this conversation, actually.
Wow, that's really amazing. Goosebumps. I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm the reason I stumble here right now is I would love to go into this direction, ask several questions, but I think I would like to continue the other side because yeah, let's do that. You said that you almost immediately started doing research and interviewing because you knew this very well. And this is going into the direction why I asked you for this interview today, because in the Creativity Habit podcast and beyond, of course, you talk to artists and makers. And there you said a couple times that you are not doing art, but asking questions. That is your art. And I found that very interesting and very fascinating. And I could immediately understand why you say something like that. And now that you said you started almost immediately after that you heard that voice with doing research and interviewing, does that mean that asking questions and having this, the base of this art inside of you has always been there, more or less?
No. So, and what's interesting is I now would say that my art is also is many things. And one of them is being a writer and different aspects. But I wasn't able to say that then. I wasn't able to own that in myself. But I do believe that part of my art is asking questions. And that was the piece about learning to listen, is at the time when I heard that, I did not think of myself as a good listener. And even now, there's plenty of times when I don't feel that I'm listening very well. But when I do actively listen, what happens is questions rise up and they are they're the questions that I most want answers to. They tend to be sometimes what people have called deep, or I don't know, people have called them many things. And for me, they were just the questions I wanted answers to, which only seem to show themselves when I am committed to a certain kind of listening. Mm-hmm. So when I do an interview, for example, I go to a particular place that is becoming more and more the how I'm living more like my life outside of interviews. But for a while, that was the place that kind of listening showed up. But I didn't think of that as something that came naturally to me. I'm not one of those people that says, oh, ever since I was little, I was always asking questions and people were always saying, you ask all these questions. I wasn't like that. First of all, I think I was much quieter, but I just wasn't like that. I really did have to learn to listen to be able to find those questions. But again, this is another part of the journey of, this has been a theme in my life of not really valuing the kinds of questions that I asked. And it wasn't until maybe 4 years ago, And I'd been doing interviews for a while, and I'd heard very good things. Like, I'd gotten a lot of great feedback from the people that I interviewed, but I just didn't really take that in. I never quite believed them. And then I was working with a couple who were writing a book, and my whole job was to ask them questions. And the reason they hired me was they said, "Wow, you ask the most amazing questions. We want to hire you." And I thought, wait, maybe there is something to the questions I ask. Like, they want to pay me money for the questions I ask. That was when I started to let in that maybe my questions aren't the same as everybody's or the way everybody asks questions. And I began to actually look at my, like, what is it about the questions that I ask? And many people, I mean, there's amazing, amazing interviewers out there. So there are many, many people out there who ask phenomenal questions. This is not to say that there aren't, just that the kinds of questions that I ask and that you ask as well. I hear it in the way that you ask questions and the types of questions you ask, that there's something, there's a quality to them that I began to really watch for, listen for, pay attention to, in order to understand what is this with these questions and what is my relationship to questions and why do I love them so much. And of course, it was a number of questions that I was asking about questions, but they just, questions feel like freedom to me. And so I've just fallen so deeply in love with them that I have actually completely forgotten what I was answering, what your question was. If I
went far, no, it's wonderful. No, absolutely wonderful. Oh, there's so much here. I mean, it's hard to believe that you get so much feedback and you have a podcast with I don't know how many thousands and thousands of downloads, and people love it. And it's because of your questions, and they even tell you in words, but it's you're unable to take it in. Or I don't mean not you are unable, but it's hard. It's difficult for you to understand it's something special. And it's, again, only, well, money that people want to pay you
right,
for the special right. skill you have that makes you realize things about yourself. That's so amazing. And again, I find it sad somehow.
Yes.
Because it's so often, isn't it, that people start to believe in their art or in other things when other people start spending money for it. And I'm not talking about other people only. I can see the same way of thinking in my head.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
And it's not only because asking questions would be too normal. I think it could have happened with any skill whatsoever. It could have been painting, that you don't believe people that your paintings are good. I don't think it only has to do with the fact that we're talking about questions here. Did that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is a huge, huge thing. I think it's more definitely stronger in women, more of a thing that comes up in women than men. I've actually just had many conversations with a friend, another artist, about this very thing. But it's true. It's a really good point, Stephanie, that it wasn't until people offered to pay me for that I began to go, oh, maybe there is value here. I hadn't even thought about that before. I hadn't noticed that, but that's exactly how it happened.
So what did your mind tell you when people told you your questions are wonderful and special? Did you just go, okay, that's it?
I was always gracious. Like I received it graciously. I just didn't let it go very deep. I think I must have believed in myself enough because I continued. So there was a part of me that must have believed in myself. And I also just loved it so much. I loved being able to be in conversation that way, being able to talk to people that I've always admired and then just sit down with them and ask them whatever I wanted to ask. I thought that was amazing. So there's that. And I mean, it's clearly a self-worth thing. And I don't know why that.
Yeah, there was a little problem with the connection. And you said something about that it's a self-worth thing.
Yeah, that just seems to be part of my journey. I think stepping really fully into what I most care about and how I most want to show up has been a long, long path of exploration and discovery. So I think that's just part of my time here, is that's like part of my work is to have started with a somewhat low sense of self-worth and to have to keep strengthening it and in order to be here in the way that I want to be here.
I also see that it's something typical for art again, because when you're doing art, when you're an artist, whatever you do or make, whether you're on stage or you paint pictures or you do music or you ask questions, I think you put yourself out there. You give a lot of yourself and you make it. It's 100% your creation and you put it out there. And that makes you vulnerable. And if you're open and interested in what other people think, which is normal, then you get insecure.
Mm-hmm.
More than if you're, I don't know, maybe a bookkeeper. That's a silly comparison, but
yeah, that's interesting.
So
interesting thing to think about.
When you talk about asking questions as your art, do you do something to hone your craft? Do you practice? Do you build your craft somehow?
Yes, I think I do, in some ways really consciously, some ways less so. But well, one thing is the way I started. When I started doing interviews, I did a tremendous amount of preparation, which I still do a fair amount of preparation, but I did a tremendous amount. And then I wrote out every question. I would have pages and pages of questions. And then I would have them like written word for word. And that was back in like 2010. That was a while ago. And then over time, I got more confident in trusting in the flow of the conversation and trusting in having done the research that the information is there and it will come up when the time is right, and trusting in myself in the moment. But one of the things that I would always do before interviews was say to myself, was set an intention to drop my agenda so that whatever wanted to come through could come through. So I would hold the space. It was definitely my responsibility, I felt, as the interviewer, to hold the space and to direct the flow of the conversation for both me and the guest, but also for the listener. And at the same time, trust in the direction that the conversation went. But this dropping of my agenda was really, really important. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't about me, that it wasn't about me wanting to show what I knew to prove anything, to get my point across. It's not to take away from the fact that there's value in my voice, but that I was really here from this wide open a space as I could get myself into, just open. So that's something that I will consciously do to move into the space of questioning, because I find that, similar to what I said earlier, that the questions that rise up in respect to the kind of listening that is happening in the moment. Mm-hmm. So the deeper I can go in my listening, the more likely the truer, more searching questions will show themselves, will reveal themselves. And that kind of listening also requires from me a slowing down. It's very easy, less so now. When I was younger, I would loved speeding through life. It was very next thing. Okay, now I'm here, now I'm there. And it's very hard to catch the questions when I'm moving that fast. So the other piece of that was learning to slow down. I also think that's why I was drawn to the Zen Center.
Because
I needed to learn to slow down and continue to practice. Every day, I continue to practice slowing down and opening. Up to this day. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The opening and the slowing are the two biggest practices that I work on.
What does it mean concretely? Do you mean meditation? Do you mean observation of nature, or how do you slow down?
There's a lot of ways. So one of the things that I do now is I have this daily creativity hour called Illumin that I feel is this hour of sacred devotion to creativity. And anyone can come, it's available. You know, this is how we started to enter into this conversation, you and me, is through this. And in order for that hour to happen, it's not in order, but because I want to show up for that in a way that is truly present, unhurried, calm, that really that sacredness can come from me, because I open with a blessing, I open with an artist prayer and then a blessing to the creative spirit. And each time I say those, I want to feel them. And in order to feel them, it requires that I be present as I say them. And so I actually spend the first 2 hours of the day, which the hour for me is at 9 a.m. So I wake up sometime before 7. And then those first couple hours, I do meditation, I do stretching, I make my tea, I do all different things, but I don't do any work. I don't do anything that's hurried. I don't try to get things done quickly before the hour starts, because it's so important to me that I arrive in a certain state. So that is an example, a very practical example of how I will spend this time entering into the day slowly and consciously, in order that I sit down for this hour of creativity with that same kind of presence and calm. And then throughout the day, and this is relatively recent, so this is also, I started Illumin this hour at the beginning of this year. And as a result of doing this every day, because it's 5 days a week, as a result of doing it, it has changed the way I do the rest of my day, mm-hmm. and has made me want to bring that kind of sacredness into more of my day. So ways that I will slow down throughout the day are, instead of just rushing into eating, which I will still do at times. So it's always, like I say, it's this constant practice for me, but is to stop, to be in a place of gratitude, to offer a blessing, and then to eat with that kind of attention. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I rush through my day, sometimes I don't. But the more that I don't, the better I feel. And so I work to sit down before I do any major task and just gratitude and intention. Mm-hmm. Next thing, when I close it, I try to, okay, thank you. And then intention before the next thing. And I am finding that in these last couple of months, that this practice is going deeper, that it's a practice I wanted to do for a long time, but without having this hour that roots me into it every single morning, it was very hard for me to keep remembering to do it. So something about this hour has changed the hours that follow.
And you invite everybody and anybody to join you, and they all turn their microphones off, and yes, you do an hour together. That's Illumin. Yes, I've been there and I love it.
Yeah, me too. I really love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you slow down, and you described earlier how you go deeply into the conversation, how you listen deeply, is it sometimes a struggle or confusion around crossing a line? You said deep questions come up and you want to ask further and further. Is it difficult for you sometimes to decide, oh, am I allowed to ask this? Or does this come easily? Can you feel it easily?
Yeah. It's interesting. That has definitely changed over the years too. I think I have gotten in some ways more careful, because I used to just ask the questions, and I found I wasn't aware of the impact that they would have. And I would, and people sometimes would, I don't know, they would eat. I think sometimes they just weren't the right questions to be asking someone. And I was kind of checked out. I wasn't really noticing that at first, or I would notice it in their response. Or I would ask questions and people would say things like, wow, you really go deep, Daphne. Like, you don't waste any time. And I would get really embarrassed. I felt like, oh man, that's right. I shouldn't be asking these kinds of questions. And this is not how people want to have conversations. So now, a couple things, I think. One, I've actually gotten a lot more careful about who I spend my time with, which sounds almost obnoxious, but I don't mean it that way. It just, I realized that it's gotten more and more important for me to be able to show up as myself. And so people that seem that they're not looking for the kinds of conversations that I'm looking for, it doesn't mean I just write them off or something. It just means that I'm most likely not going to get so close to them, that I am more careful in that way. But I'm also bolder about asking the questions that I really do care about, because I think we're all adults, and if someone doesn't want to answer, they don't have to. I never ask questions in a way. I never want to put somebody in an uncomfortable place. I never am trying to ask a question that is challenging in a way that is a more about me than about them. Like, so my questions are coming from a place that is, as much as I can tell at this point in my life, from a genuine interest in that exploration. It's about, ultimately, all my questions come from this place when I'm asking this, these kinds of questions. What is it to be human? And what is your experience of being human? Because I'm trying to understand what we're doing here and why it's like so much of it doesn't make sense. So can I just ask you some questions about what it is for you to be human? So maybe I might understand a little better, or at least widen my the possibilities that exist inside of me. That's really where they come from. And I recognize now, after many years, that there are a lot of people that aren't preoccupied with that, that aren't obsessed with that line of questioning. And honestly, sometimes I'll wake up and especially on a weekend, and I'll start talking to my husband and I'll ask him these questions, and he'll say, "I just woke up." I can't go there yet. So I have learned to wait. and to just, I do pay a lot more attention now to the conversation, and I can notice better, not always, but I can notice better, like, oh, this is not the place for one of my questions. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I used to be like, well, I'm going to ask it anyway. But now it's like, no, that's okay. I don't have to ask these questions. Mm-hmm. I can be different. I can, you know, be in this conversation in the way that the conversation seems to want to be. I'm still working on that though, because I think that there's still at times some hiding. So I keep trying to pay attention to where I'm hiding, mm-hmm. as opposed to respecting where people are at and the conversation is at. It is a balance, and mm-hmm. it's always changing. Well, that's where I'm at with it now. I think just that I'm bolder, but I'm also more aware, and always working on both of those.
That's so interesting. You answered in this answer here, you answered so many questions. I was so curious to ask how not only your art developed, but also art also changes the artist, how you change through your art. And that was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It is a great question.
Thank you. Oh, from you.
Gosh, no. No, no, no. That's what I don't want.
No, honestly, thank you. But you said earlier questions. Let's go back a little bit. Questions are freedom. Could you talk about that a little further, please?
Well, it's funny. I was talking with a friend about how she was telling me about, you know, how we both really love this place of uncertainty. And it's interesting because for some people, it's harder to be in a place of uncertainty. And I said to her, I think the reason that I love it so much is because it feels the most honest, in that this idea that I know what it is to be human, that I know that I understand life, that I've figured things out. Yes, I have a certain amount of wisdom from having lived as long as I have. There's that, and having experience. And each one of us has a certain amount of wisdom from being alive as long as we're alive. So that is very true. And this idea that I'm supposed to have figured things out, that I'm supposed to know, feels to me actually leaves me feeling very unsafe. So I feel the safest in worlds where questions are the most alive, where we are have a common agreement that we don't know most things, that we're not supposed to have figured things out, that we can't, because this world is so much more mystery than known and will always be so much more mystery than known, at least in my experience, speaking from my perspective, that there's just so much more I don't know. And I don't say that to be humble. I literally believe very deeply, like I have been in this body my whole life, and I'm still mystified by why I lose my temper with my husband in that particular moment. Like, what just happened? I don't understand. Why did I have that reaction? What's happening here? So it's like, I'm still so much a mystery to myself, that how can this world not be forever a mystery to me? How can we not forever be mysteries to each other? So I feel most at home when I recognize that, when I acknowledge that, when I live in a space where that seems to be more of what feels true than the opposite. And in that way, questions are freedom to me, because questions are wide open doors that never, I mean, a question, when a question becomes an answer, it's no longer a question. So as long as it stays a question, it's wide open. Mm-hmm. And that wide openness is what feels like freedom. Does that make sense?
That is, I love this so much. I didn't expect this. I'm deeply moved by this. This gives me a totally different perspective on not only myself, but on so many things, on the world, the people around me, yeah, myself, as I said. Wow.
I would love to ask you some questions right now, but I don't know if that's appropriate.
Sure, of course.
I'm really fascinated by, in your response, like what it is. What is shifting? What is that that's happening?
To see insecurity, or to see openness, not only as something that is scary, but that gives you freedom. And that is something I have, well, I have probably seen it in several places, but not in general. Not unsafe or unsure about things is usually something that is not good. You're supposed to know everything, and you're supposed to master everything. Well, not everything. I hope you know what I mean, but you're supposed to be good at what you do. And it's the other way around. It's freedom, where we can all play and find out together. That's a new perspective. And yeah, as I said, I get angry with myself when I react in a way I don't like. And I am puzzled when others react in a way that puzzles me. And it's absolutely different perspective now. Did I explain this so that you can understand? I feel my words didn't come really well, really good.
No, they did. They did. I'm just listening. It just makes me wonder what kind of world we would live in if we were encouraged to ask questions, to not know as we got older.
Exactly. That's the other part. What if something like that was normal? Here's insecurity, here's openness, here's room to play and do research. Let's enjoy all together. And that would be a totally different world. That's the other part why my mind was just blown away for a second.
Yeah.
Oh. Thank you, Daphne.
You're welcome.
I feel that you answered my questions. There are a couple left, but they don't fit here right now. And I think it's a beautiful ending from my side. Is there anything you would like to add? Is there anything I haven't asked that you would like to?
Well, I would say one last thing, because this was another question that I held for a really long time and still do because I forget it all the time, which is, I kept asking myself, if I love questions so much, why am I so hungry for answers and this need to know? And what I've come to see, although the answer that I've felt my way into, I think is still incomplete, but is, as there is that need to know, there is a need for certainty. I do want to have some sense of identity, safe, because there's also that biologically, I think we're just driven to need to know things so that everything, we don't wake up in the morning and stumble our way through life by having everything always be an unknown. And I'm learning to make peace with the fact that I both find a tremendous freedom in questions and also am very hungry for answers. And the reason I wanted to share that now is that if someone's listening and one sees a value in answers, I would say yes. I've been giving a lot of answers this last hour. I think answers are amazing. And but also if they find any kind of struggle like I have around living in both worlds, you know, being able to stay open and ask questions and have no agenda while also at times needing to have an agenda and have boundaries and close at times and find answers, that they somehow have to walk hand in hand. And I still don't know how in my own life. I still wrestle with that one a lot, but just that is part of that. Answers are part of the questions. Questions are part of the answers, and it is a forever, forever journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not maybe the most eloquent way to end, but it just felt important to share.
No, I think it's wonderful. It's so amazing how you open up the space that that there is so much room for uncertainty and that we appreciate it. And actually, life itself is uncertain. And I always found that very scary. And there are not answers in everything. Oh, one thing I would like to know. Now, you ask so many questions. You always come up with this urge to find out more. The next step would be to write. I think for me, it would be a natural step. If somebody works with words like you do, to be an author, to start writing. I know that you've been writing during Illumin Hour.
Yes.
Besides that, is that something you... Am I allowed to ask this? Is this something
you can ask whatever you want?
that you are going towards, that you're moving towards?
I'm moving towards writing more consistently and sharing it. So right now that's like Instagram, getting back onto Instagram. I have a very interesting relationship with Instagram, but I'm getting back onto it and writing on it. And then I have my weekly newsletter. As far as a book right now, no, I'm not, because nothing has risen up clearly to say, oh, I need to write a book about this. Right now, I think my writing is much more about, okay, what is it? What do I care the most about? And I think what my writing will now really start to focus on, so maybe something will naturally arise from that, I don't know, is this, the sacredness, the importance, the value of creativity, what it is to live a life that holds creativity as like my guide, as in some ways, I hesitate to use this language, but I can't think of anything else in the moment, but kind of as my God, you know, is it, in this life where I do truly feel like I'm becoming more and more devoted to creativity, what does that look like? How does that show up? And to write about that. And because I believe that the world that we are in will survive if we can get a lot more creative. And I am just so committed to that at this point. So it's possible. I don't know what will happen with my writing, but that's what I want to be writing about now.
That's really a beautiful ending, because I so much agree. And that's the reason for this podcast and for so many things I do in this world. And thank you, Daphne, so much. Where can people find you?
The easiest place is daphnecone.com. So daphnecohn.com. And everything, it's always changing, of course. It's always changing, but that's the home for everything. And same, it's at Daphne Cohn on Instagram. And then Illumin Hour is for the hour, which you can get to though through daphnecohn.com. So either one, daphnecohn.com or illuminhour.com.
I am very, very grateful for this talk, and I'm very grateful for this impact you have and this the way you move in this world and what you give. Thank you so much, and thank you, and have a wonderful day, Daphne.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome, Stephanie. It has been such a pleasure. I really loved this conversation, and I knew that I would. I don't actually do many podcasts as the person being interviewed, because I really only want, it's very selfish, but I only want these kinds of conversations. There's a depth that you bring to them in the way that you ask, in the way that you listen, in your curiosity, that just makes space for the types of conversations I love having. And although this was a little less of a conversation, more of an interview, it still was, it's so beautiful. And really think you're a beautiful host and question asker. So thank you.
Thank you, Daphne. I sincerely hope that you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. It was wonderful for me to hear the process behind Daphne's very special art, and to feel her, how present she is, and her deep honesty. I thought it was wonderful. At some points in this conversation, I had to decide on which direction to go, and I very much hope that I chose the right ones for you. And if you enjoyed this conversation, please drop us 5 stars at Apple Podcasts and at Spotify. This not only helps us to be found, but it's always such great joy for the work we do here with this podcast. I put into the show notes Daphne's presence on the internet, her website and her Instagram account, as well as ours from Atelier Talk. And on Daphne's website, you find everything about Illumine Hour we talked about, her within community, of course, her podcast, and also the song we talked about in the beginning of the of our episode. The song that everybody is supposed to find and sing here on Earth. Please have a look at that beautiful text. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We're looking forward to having you again. Bye.